hearing, not from the politicians, but from the streets of what people are demanding as this will build?
Well, the conversation needs not to be about trust, whether or not the black communities, brown communities can trust police. It's about what is the police job? What is their job description? What are they out there on the streets doing? If the job is tough, the job is like, give them less to do. Like, decriminalize drugs, decriminalize sex work, like, get rid of the broken windows theory, make them responsible for doing less.
Your t-shirt, Michael, Native Son by Richard Wright.
Yes, indeed. I am a Native Son, and I fear for my life in the same ways that, you know, Eric Garner was fighting for his.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there. I thank you all so much for being with us. Michael Denzel Smith is with The Nation. Graham Weatherspoon is a retired detective with the New York Police Department. Harry Siegel is a columnist and editorial writer for The New York Daily News. And Nina Turner, Democratic Ohio State Senator, whose district includes Cleveland. This conversation will continue. We'll also be in Lima next week, throughout the week, covering the UN Climate Summit. There is a lot going on. Our website is democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Berk, Renee Felsar, Mate Nurmin Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sam Alkoff, Hani Masood, Ravi Karens. Happy birthday to Dina Guzder and Steve Martinez. I'm Amy Goodman and with Juan Gonzalez.
Dearborn's annual Christmas tree lighting and sing-along is happening on Monday, December 8th at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center. The event begins with musical entertainment in the lobby at 6 p.m. and then everyone will head outside for the ceremonial lighting of the Christmas tree at 6:30 p.m. Next, everyone is invited into the Michael A. Guido Theater, where we will sing some traditional holiday songs. Refreshments will be served, and your children will have a chance to visit with Santa. This is always a fun family event and a great way to start the holiday season in Dearborn.
This is WHFR Dearborn. And now it's time to start our public affairs show here at WHFR, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Well, hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. There has to be another edition because we couldn't call it new, could we? And this is the December 5th, 2014 edition of the new WHFR Journal. Hope you're not too hectic out there with your holidays. My name is Jay Koronick, and I am the host for the show as well as the station advisor here at WHFR. By myself in the studio today, so boy, look out, there's going to be a lot of opinions just from me, flying left and right, because, well, there's nobody else here to contradict me. We do thank Henry Ford Community College for allowing us this freedom of opinion. We try to be responsible, of course, and we just want to remind you that, of course, the opinions expressed here on the show are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford College. Well, we got that out of the way. That's good. Speaking of Henry Ford College, of course, enrollment is open and going on currently for classes of the winter semester. Yeah, I know it's the holidays. You don't want to think about it. But if you want some life enrichment, if you want some additional education towards a degree or a certificate, a two-year, four-year, whatever, we're available. Yes, we right here at Henry Ford College. But it all starts January 12th. You really need to be registered before then because that's the day classes start. And we got some guidelines and rules now is that you can't get into a class if you're not enrolled for it and it's already started. And we've had those rules for a couple of years. So you can't say, well, I'll wait a couple of weeks and then I'll just drop in. And that way I don't have to do the first couple of weeks of work. That's not true. Not true at all. Although it kind of was true about a decade ago, but not anymore. So obviously, there's a lot of classes at different days and times that are open right now and available, and it's good to make your first choice as soon as possible. Registration and the Easy Pay installment plan are also currently going on. Of course, there's a number of reasons. I gave you some already in general why you want to take classes here. But, of course, the cost of HFC's tuition remains unchanged for winter 2015. And, of course, we have a tuition guarantee. So if you start here, and we do have to push up tuition, as pretty much all colleges have to do since Michigan, the state, does not rank support for colleges and universities as a priority, unlike many other states. In fact, the last time I checked, we're almost near the bottom of the 50 states in terms of percent of money given to state colleges and universities. So that's a shame. You can't say yes to Michigan in that regard, can you? No. But nonetheless, we have this tuition guarantee. Only we have it that if we do have to raise tuition and you're in programs, well, you have to pay that. But once you graduate from here with your two-year degree, you can just file a piece of paper saying, I did it, and we'll give you the increases back. Little bonus check for graduation. Not too bad a deal. Also, we guarantee that no classes will be canceled throughout the semester for students who have registered and paid their tuition. So if you get into that class, you don't have to worry. It's going to happen. And there's clever ways they figured out a way to do that, because obviously we can't afford to run classes with only a couple students in them, unless there's exceptionally good reasons. And in the past, sometimes people would meet on the first day and, oh my gosh, I'm sorry to tell you, but your class is canceled. Go find something else. That doesn't happen anymore. No, it hasn't happened in several years now. Quite a few years, actually. So that's our tuition freeze guarantee, and also our guarantee about keeping the classes there if you are enrolled in them. So how do you learn more about this? You could call 313-845-6403. Or you can visit, of course, the big-time website, which still has the extra C in it, hfcc.edu. All the information is there. And in fact, you can go to hfcc.edu/steps to find out how to apply. Very easy steps, hfcc.edu/steps. So it's the winter 2015 academic calendar at Henry Ford College. Now, down to the big stories of the day. For Dearborn and the surrounding area. Reaching over to the newspapers, because that's my sources, except for the top story, which is only in the Times-Herald so far this week. Probably be in the Press and Guide this weekend on Sunday, but Times-Herald got it in there, and it's what I stated on the air. So those of you who are regular listeners of the new WHFR Journal, and I know you are, I got it right, and did my my sources too. Guerrero files for recount in judge race is the top story in the Dearborn Times Herald from this last week. That's Tony Guerrero, candidate for the 19th District Court judge seat in the November 4th election. On November 24th, not too far back, did file for a recount with the state of Michigan. And his statement is, the people that supported me felt the need for a recount because the discrepancy was so close. The difference was only 85 votes, as we reported here on the show. Actually, there were more write-in votes than that. And the article goes on to say that, in fact, and this is never reported, in fact, to my knowledge, unless you really ask them individually about it, there were 91 spoiled ballots. Now, that might have been citywide out of about 20,000 ballots cast. Some people made mistakes. They did some terrible things. They voted incorrectly somehow, and their ballots could not be counted. Now, I'm not sure in a recount if you take another look at those ballots or what you do, but you at least recount the official ballots that were not so-called spoiled. And of course, the vote was Mark Summers. Judge Summers, current 19th District Court judge, got 10,175 votes, and Tony Guerrero got 10,090, just a difference of 85 votes. Every vote counts, folks, unless it's spoiled. Just remember that. They did ask Summers for a comment. Kind of interesting for this article. I mean, really, what can you say? I mean, it's your right to ask for a recount of course, you have to pay for it. Kind of interesting. That's why I looked at Tony Guerrero's statement, the first statement they quote here. The people that supported me felt the need for a recount. Well, I think the people that supported Tony Guerrero were also the ones that donated to his campaign, and they must have donated a lot of money, collectively at least, because he had his picture in his ad for being elected for this position in the paper at least 6 months ago, maybe 7 months ago now. And it's Press and Guide, Times Herald, at least, you know, his picture was on the front page or the top, bottom, big ads. A couple of attack ads close to the campaign, but that's expected. But he had a lot more ads, and in color. His face was in color, and that costs extra money to put color into a picture in a newspaper. In any event, I think his supporters said, okay, we'll go the extra, whatever it is, a couple hundred bucks or a couple thousand. What's the difference after collectively we've already put out? And I'm just guessing here, $50,000? Four mailings, four beautiful printed cards and mailings. I mean, Summers did at least equal, although not the newspaper ads for 6 months back. But I bet he spent at least $50,000, or his supporters. So, you know, if you have the money to do so, and it's relatively close, it doesn't hurt. Out of 20,000 votes, only 85 difference, doesn't hurt to have a recount. And they do that all by hand, by the way, folks. But anyway, here's the quote from the Times Herald article from Summers. With that margin, that 85-vote difference out of 21,000 votes cast, he says, it's extraordinarily unlikely, and of course, they didn't put the apostrophe in there for it's. I mean, he said it's out loud, but in fact, if you spell it out, he's saying it is extraordinarily unlikely. So if you mean it is, as an old English teacher, and I mean old, I mean a former English teacher from a few decades back, it's IT apostrophe S. If you mean it is, you spell it IT apostrophe S. If you don't mean it is, then you don't put an apostrophe between the T and the S or after the S. You got that? So that'll straighten you out for the rest of your life now if you just remember that about, gee, is there apostrophe in it's or after it or what? If you mean it is, but you say it's, then it's IT apostrophe S because you left out the I in front of is at the beginning of the word is. So anyway, not talk about grammatical typos here, but it is a newspaper, so I'm sure they're making notes there in the office. Anyway, he says, with that margin, it's extraordinarily unlikely that anything would change. And then the story is continued on page 88. And we always recommend that if you get into a story, you should read it all the way to the end. Because the way stories are written, they're not done chronologically, and not all the big ideas are up front. There's some interesting details that could actually change your whole perspective on the story further down in the article. By the way, the vote recount is set to take place December 11th and 12th in the Dearborn Administrative Center City Council Chambers. So in our new city hall, as I prefer to call it, they're going to be counting right there in the city council chambers, which I haven't seen. It is must be a small auditorium of some sort. Nine teams from the Wayne County, which that's not grammatically correct, and one team from the state. Yeah, the state of Michigan, so the word does, okay, there, will count the ballots by hand to ensure accuracy in the results. So is it counted nine teams? Nine times? Each team counts it? Or they just divvy up the votes and each do about out of 20,000, what? Divided by nine, 2,500 each, whatever. I don't know. Summers says he received a call from the Secretary of State about the recount November 26th and is prepared for it. Why would they call him? Well, just to notify him that, by the way, your race is being challenged, I guess, through a recount. I guess that's kind of courteous. The Secretary of State of the state of Michigan called him. And Summers said that's Tony Guerrero, is not claiming anything specific, as far as I can see. Basically just wants them to go in and hand count what's already been counted. Unquote. and Tony Guerrero hasn't said there was any errors. Just because there's 91 spoiled ballots, again, if they're spoiled, they're spoiled. I don't think they all of a sudden magically are going to be counted. But maybe, you know, what you say, well, it's just the machines. Machines can't make a mistake. Well, of course, machines can make a mistake in tabulating too. They can break down. They can operate incorrectly. If they're, you know, it's called a malfunction. You know, nothing could ever go wrong. Go wrong. Go wrong. That's a famous quote from the movie 2001: A Space Odyssey. From HAL, the big time computer in which nothing can ever go wrong. Go wrong. Go wrong. And there is the hand count always of the absentee ballots. That's not done on a card. That can't go into a machine. So the absentee ballots, there could be a chance for more human error, or human error, period, with hand counting the absentee ballots. So there is a purpose that may change a few votes. Okay. Summers finally said, I have the highest degree of confidence in the system that we use, and there is no reason that I know of to believe that there would be any change in votes. The equipment that Dearborn uses is good equipment, and it picks up the marks, so I don't expect any change. As I stated here, in my one precinct in Dearborn, their computers were down for the first couple hours. They had, the people working there said they had major problems with their computers, which I don't doubt it got fixed and everything was fine. They had paper ballots that people could do or something that should equal fine. But I'm just saying if there were some computer problems in my district, in my precinct, then, you know, not alone could that be a difference of 85 votes, I don't think, but maybe there were some problems elsewhere. So nothing wrong in doing that, as long as it's done relatively promptly. And there's no Supreme Court that comes in and says, stop that count, which is the craziest thing I've ever heard. And that goes back to year 2000, of course, the famous presidential election and the vote count in Florida. They're doing a precise vote count that went on and on, as you may remember if you're old enough, 4 weeks, maybe more than a month, if I think correctly. And we didn't know who won the presidential election, whether it was Gore or George W. Bush, Al Gore or George W. Bush, because of that, because Florida was the key state in the Electoral College. Again, in popular votes, Al Gore won. That doesn't matter because according to our Constitution, they set up this thing called the Electoral College. And so it's the votes the state has to give that go either one way or the other. But almost done with the recount by hand to make it official, to make it legal, and the Supreme Court of the United States of America, SCOTUS A, just SCOTUS if it's Supreme Court of the United States, stepped in and said, no, you don't have to. It's delaying the obvious outcome. Obvious to whom? We got a vote going on here. We got a recount that would make it finally 100% official. How dare the Supreme Court shut that down? Of course, my opinion, of course. How dare they say that a corporation is a person and do all the rights of a human being? They are not people in so many ways that I could point out, and they don't deserve, campaign contributions unlimited, without any transparency, without any divulging of honesty, and you know that's just wrong. And unlimited contributions from rich people? Well, you asked me. I didn't hear you ask, but you asked me, and I think that's wrong too. So, well, if you're rich, you can give every penny. But doesn't that imbalance the effect? It means that the rich people get the politicians they want to do the things finally they want them to do for them, not necessarily for everybody. So I do believe in campaign limits. But, oh no, not the Supreme Court of the United States. Because, like, money is a person too, I guess. And money can go anywhere it wants to and do anything it wants to. Because it's just like a corporation, just as unreal. And yet a corporation does have a prescribed goal. And that's number one prescribed goal, according to its incorporation, is to make profit for its owners and or shareholders. prophet. So if prophet talks, we're supposed to give it freedom of speech? Is prophet more important than other human values? I don't think so. That's just totally wrong. So what's called Citizens United, if you hear about that, that's the ruling from SCOTUS about, in effect, saying corporations are people. And that's a paraphrase, of course, from Republican presidential candidate Mitt Romney. And that's not quite what Citizens United said, but that's what Mitt Romney said. So it must be true that citizens are people. I mean, he's gone out to lunch with a number of corporations, and he must have shaken their hands many times. He invites them to his Christmas parties. You know, I mean, that must be what Mitt's talking about, right? Because he said corporations are people. So, yeah, put them on your Christmas card list. Any of you send Christmas cards to corporations? Well, I don't, because they're not people. Okay. So I just wanted you to know, we broke the story here on the new WHFR Journal. We actually had, after more than 30 years of doing this, we had a source, and they were correct. Wow. It's so great you have inside sources. I mean, really. And, of course, the newspaper can't just use, you know, inside sources, because that's just rumor. And a good newspaper has to wait until it's official, until there's objective fact that a recount has been requested. Unless Tony Guerrero would have come out in public and made a statement, a press release, saying, I'm going to file for recount, which apparently he didn't until he actually did it. So he mentioned it after the fact. So anyway, we got it right. Aren't you glad you're listening to the new WHFR Journal here from Henry Ford College? From WHFR.FM, the station making waves, independent, non-commercial, well, you know all about that. What other stories are going on here? Let's move ahead. From the Press and Guide last Sunday, on the front page, it says, consider the Dearborn Animal Shelter for year-end donations. And I'm all in favor of that. You know, they now have a go-ahead for a new facility as soon as the train station switches over, and we have a story about that. We know the exact date it's going to open, and there's an open house. I want to mention that to you in today's show, of course, too, coming up. But my point is, this last Tuesday, a couple days ago, today's Friday, December 5th, and this last Tuesday, the day after so-called Cyber Monday, was the day, and there are some special names for it, but Donate to Nonprofit Day. Well, I donate to nonprofit organizations all the time throughout the year, whenever I have some money in my pocket. But that is the day that you're supposed to remember that. Well, I got so many emails saying, don't forget us, today is the day. And here I'd already donated, so I felt kind of sad. I just tossed the envelope aside. Must have been 20 or 30, because I donate to a lot of, not much, you know, 10 bucks here, 20 bucks there, but I donate to a lot of what I think are worthy causes throughout the year. So good for the Dearborn Animal Shelter that got on the front page, a front page story. But I want you to remember that all nonprofit institutions, which are doing things different from but equally good for society, or they couldn't be officially nonprofit. You could not officially get a tax deduction on your federal taxes only. Remember, the Republican legislature and Governor Snyder said no more credit for giving to nonprofits. Shame on you. Well, I didn't say shame on you, but in effect. But you do get a credit if you itemize on your federal tax returns, income tax returns, for donating to officially incorporated and certified nonprofit organizations, whether in Michigan or elsewhere in the U.S. I donated to TV Ontario one year, which is a public radio station, a public TV station in Ontario. And I realized, of course, later that I would not get a tax donation because they're in a foreign country. Excuse me for donating to a worthy cause that's in a foreign country. That's how you do it. That's how it goes. Okay. So I'm just saying, don't forget all the other worthy nonprofits, because there's plenty of them out there, including Henry Ford College. Duh. He said, well, people give you money. The state of Michigan gives you money. Well, not enough. We have to do fundraising all the time. WHFR Radio? Yeah. We don't get, you know, we got the same amount of money. Well, we got a little increase from Henry Ford College from their student service fee fund. We get no money directly from the main funds of the college, from the federal government, or from the state of Michigan, or from the city of Dearborn. We get no official money from anybody except a few dollars from the monies here at the college collected by from students who actually use student activities or want them, like the newspaper, the theater presentations, the music presentations, the newspaper, and of course, as they're called, intramural athletics, intercollegiate athletics, not intramural. We don't do that, I don't think. Intercollegiate athletics here. And WHFR. We all get a little bit of that pot of so-called student service fees. And I think we got, after 15 years, we got $1,000 more this year. I'm not sure. But it's still only about 30% or so of the money we have to spend every year to stay on the air and broadcast. I'm just saying, yeah, yeah, we're a nonprofit too. And if you do donate to us, and I know many of you have already this year, thank you very much. Our pledge drive, you know, is every April. So I'm not making a pitch here. I'm just putting us in the running with all the other nonprofits that, yes, if you're concerned about a slight tax credit, a slight rebate, if you will, not officially, and it depends on the tax bracket you're in. So I can't say if you give us $100, you get $10 back. It's, I think, if you're in the 38% bracket at the very top of what they think is the top bracket, what it should be, then you might get about a third back if you itemize your deductions. So you might get about $33 back out of 100 if you're in that top bracket and you itemize with any of these nonprofits, with any of them. So you do get a little bit back if that's an incentive, and that's kind of nice, even though it's a delayed effect. But the whole idea is help the nonprofits, help the needy. And the nonprofits help the needy and do things that other organizations can't. And if you donate, for example, to WHFR, we're part of Henry Ford College, and so you actually get a donation, thank you, official receipt from our development office here at Henry Ford College. But the money doesn't go into the college fund and get lost. It comes here, goes directly into our separate fund at the college, and so we get to use 100% of it. So don't think all the money's just going to go to the college and they'll spend some of it here and there, and poor WHFR won't get it all. Yes, we will. Yes, we will. So good for the animal shelter. I'm a regular supporter, monthly donor to the animal shelter, because I believe that's so important, and it's so well run, such a well run nonprofit here locally. So please consider a generous donation before the end of the year. If you need the tax credit, or you say, I got no money, but I got some time. Okay. Volunteer with one of the nonprofits. For WHFR, you'd have to take a class here, which costs money, although you could contact our general manager, Susan McGraw, and maybe she can find a way to give you scholarship for that enrollment. Not saying we have any, but she's the one to ask. Susan McGraw, telecommunication area coordinator here at Henry Ford College. Okay. Looking at the paper still. That's still due last Sunday at the Press and Guide. Craig Ferrand, who was on our show a couple weeks ago, and what a guy, what a knowledgeable guy, very articulate, after years of being a journalist. And he began in journalism here at Henry Ford College in our journalism newspaper area. Yep. That's how he got his start. Isn't that amazing? Yep. Got to start somewhere, of course. Well, he has this interesting idea. He said, this season, this holiday season, of course, is a perfect time to discuss divisive issues, things that divide us. And here he has a quote from Ban Ki-moon, who is the current UN Secretary General, head of the United Nations. And his quote is, defeating racism, tribalism, intolerance, and all forms of discrimination will liberate us all, victim and perpetrator alike. So Craig says, we're now on the clock for the most special and thought-provoking of holiday seasons, which somehow makes it appropriate to tackle issues as divisive as any we're facing in America today. Why? Because they're about people and love and acceptance and persecution. All the things that get talked about from the pulpit or at our holiday dinner tables this time of year. All the things that seem to be forever in flux around the world. So what are these issues? Race, same-sex unions, notice I did not say same-sex marriage, and the rights of the LGBT communities. And for those that never heard that acronym before, that's the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transvestite, or transsexual, perhaps, communities. But instead of talking about race, which is, he says, which is an issue too large for this space for his column, and deserves further reflection in the light of events in Ferguson, and now, as we just heard in Democracy Now! The last hour, if you listen on Fridays from 12 to 1, we carry the Friday edition, at least, of Democracy Now!, and they were talking about the tragic death by a policeman in New York City. There's also another tragic death by a policeman of another black man in Cleveland, which is also in the national papers, as well as, yes, the Ferguson thing, too. So this issue is being reinforced in the worst possible way by more of these very tragic events. He says, it's been a while since I weighed in on the same-sex unions and never on the LGBT issue. But with headlines being made in Lansing and around the country in our own U.S. Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals, it's time. Now, I know full well these are lightning rod issues. No doubt I'll have people writing, commenting, and maybe even calling the newsroom about what I write here. Good, he says. These conversations need to happen and continue. So let's start with the same-sex unions. And he asks the big question, so what's the problem? Yes, I know that there are those who see such relationships as abhorrent and a sin. To me, they're just another expression or form of human love. I see no harm in that. Hate, on the other hand, can have dire consequences for our society. Yet those who virulently oppose same-sex relationships are some of the most hateful in our society. But their behavior is condoned and cheered. No wonder the millennials and other younger generations have a problem with our society at large. As I've learned firsthand through the eyes of my grandchildren, the new generations are more colorblind and tolerant than any generation before. And that's our country's future. We are its past, as well as present. That obvious observation aside, that these issues will disappear as younger people take the reins of leadership, there is another reason the same-sex issue needs to go away. Preventing such unions is a violation of our constitutional inference of a separation of church and state. Right there in the First Amendment, it says that the Congress, and by extension any lower form of governance, shall make no law concerning religion. That means it has no right to persecute a person for exercising his or her religious freedoms, nor does it have a right to persecute a person for exercising a personal choice that may go counter to religious practices, codices, and tenets. Strip that away, and all you have left is a contractual agreement between two adults to have a legally binding relationship. And governments approve and uphold contracts all the time. Talk to those people like corporations, right? He goes on, governments issue marriage licenses even if no church is involved, and our courts rule a legal end to marriage in granting divorce. In both cases, these are legal proceedings, not religious. So let's get religion out of the equation. Of course, if a pair of gay men or gay women can find clergy to marry them, quote unquote, marry, he says, more power to all concerned. But that's irrelevant to me and should be to everyone else, since religion has nothing to do with this. And please save me from arguments about needing to protect the American nuclear family. Based on divorce rates, we've had growing numbers of nuclear families going critical and detonating for years. You get the pun? If you call it a nuclear family, then you can use the metaphor about going critical, like a bomb might, and detonating, like a bomb might. Okay, I think it's very clever. Very good writing there, Craig Ferrand. In the end, he says, marriage is nothing more than a legal formalization of an interpersonal relationship. If the relationship is weak, a piece of paper isn't going to make it strong, even though it takes a court to rule that it's over. But if the relationship is strong, well, that's what is really at center here. Loving couples of the same gender sex who want the same legal protections enjoyed by opposite sex couples. It's a legal argument. And he says, of course, it'd be interesting to see how the U.S. Supreme Court, SCOTUS, tackles this issue next year. As you know, the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals upheld Michigan's ban of same-sex marriage in opposition of every other appellate court ruling on the same type of case anywhere else in the U.S. He says, but I think that this was a calculated move by the appellate judges to push the Supremes, SCOTUS, to finally take a stand. Not the Motown group, no. And before I move on to the LGBT issue, one last comment. Okay. About human rights in general for LGBT. Just a couple of great sentences he has here, and we'll conclude without reading all of his words. He said, really? You believe that the mob, that is, the people of Michigan in the majority, should decide issues of human rights? He called them a mob. Okay? Majority of the public. In a way, big group, single opinion, single-minded, it can be like a mob. Should this group, where you call it a mob or the majority of the voting public, and remember the majority of the voting public is not the majority of the public, since so many people don't register to vote, and then so many people who are registered don't even vote. Well, anyway, he says, the mob, a simple majority, should decide whether one group of people should receive the same protections, and he ends in a question here, as the rest of us? He says, funny, but that's where Jim Crow and all the other discriminatory rules and regulations came from that persecuted and prosecuted people of color for generations in this nation. So just because a majority of people vote it or believe it doesn't mean it's the right thing to do. He says, sorry, but I've never trusted the mob to decide human rights. Let us vote on wolf hunts and gas taxes and leave it at that. Although I would say the civil rights of wolves, well, they're not corporations, but they're living creatures. I'd say they're one better than corporations. So I think we ought to consider the family life, the individual rights of the living creatures, including humans, above those of corporations. And certainly, I agree with Craig Ferrand, if it matters, on these two points that he's brought up about LGBT rights and of course, same-sex marriage. Read his column. Think about it. Share it with friends and family. I mean, if you're gathered for some holiday festivities and you run out of talking about the weather or the sports, all of them, then maybe you'd want to talk about, hey, how do you feel about what's happening in Lansing these days? And how do you feel about racism in America? And what can we do about it? I always try to turn it around at the end about, do you think there's anything we can do individually, right here, locally? Because I bet there is, in most cases. Okay. So there we go. Let's see here. I'm just going to take a slight break here, just for one commentary from... Well, we just got done with the LGBT thing, so let's stay on the same topic. Here's Jack Lessenberry from Michigan Radio, and he's got a comment about the Michigan GOP. Somewhat similar comment to what we've been talking about here from Craig Ferrand. Anyway, listen to Jack Lessenberry for just 2 minutes and 51 seconds. So perk up. Here it comes.
There's a time-honored political technique you might call the big lie theory. Basically, it works this way. If you tell the same outrageous lie over and over, no matter how big it is, eventually people will believe that at least some part of it is true. The latest and best example of this was uttered by one Ari Adler, the mouthpiece for Jace Bolger, the lame duck speaker of the Michigan House of Representatives. Yesterday, his boss admitted what everybody should already have known, that efforts to expand the state's Elliot Larson Civil Rights Act are going nowhere. There won't even be a vote in the legislature on this. After Bolger admitted this, Adler launched his lie, saying, the extremists on the left were successful in preventing civil rights protections for gays and lesbians in Michigan. What they want you to think is that Republicans are all set to protect those folks who are dragged down by the far left's insistence on extending civil rights to those scary transsexuals. That's not at all true. Though it's interesting that Republicans today at least don't want to appear bigoted against gays. A few years ago, they wouldn't have worried about that. But here's what's really going on here. Prior to the lame duck session, Bolger indicated he might be willing to expand Elliot Larson to include sexual orientation, in other words, gay and lesbian people. But the catch was, the speaker said he'd be willing to do so only if it could be coupled with a poison pill, his so-called Religious Freedom Restoration Act, which would have essentially permitted people to discriminate against anyone whose lifestyle they disapproved. Civil rights supporters would, they know, never go along with this. Even if they had, I doubt many Republicans would have supported even a meaningless expansion of Elliot Larson. That the game was over was clear last week, when the man who takes over as House Speaker next year, Kevin Cotter, said he was in favor of passing the bogus Religious Freedom Restoration Act without expanding Elliot Larson at all. However, the cold fact is that supporters of civil rights for gay Americans didn't lose their battle then. They lost it August 5th, when State Representative Frank Foster of Petoskey, the only Republican to endorse expanding Elliot Larson, was beaten in his primary over this very issue. After that, and after the GOP not only held on to their legislative majorities but increased them, it was clear there was no way there'd be any expansion of civil rights for non-heterosexuals. If there's any silver lining, it's that Republicans now feel compelled to at least pretend they favor civil rights for gays, if not transgendered human beings. This also may have been the making of a new career for Frank Foster, who emerged as somewhat of a civil rights hero. Had he won his primary, he would probably have served out his term as a little-known backbench representative. But for those of different sexual orientation or gender identity, it should be clear that Michigan government will do nothing for you. Not in the next few years in any event. For now, their hopes must lie in the federal courts.
You're listening to the new WHFR Journal for Friday, December the 5th, 2014. Jay Koronek with you here. Let's talk about some events coming up now. We've got the heavy issues somewhat under control. Not necessarily all of them, but some of them anyway. Coming up tomorrow, two things here in Dearborn that you should pay attention to. December 6th, from 1 to 6 p.m., Victorian Christmas at the Dearborn Historical Museum. We've mentioned this for a couple weeks, and we've been mentioning it on our station. But it is it's a great time to get together locally and to get it all fixed up, like the Victorian holiday that most of the antique Christmas cards remind us about. And he says the Victorians, people there at the museum, Jack Tate, the curator, in fact, of the Dearborn Historical Museum. And I was thinking, as a grammarian, Dearborn Historical Museum, is the museum historical? Why would they call it the Dearborn History Museum? Well, it's been called Historical Museum for a long time, and it's really Dearborn history it's all about. It's a museum of Dearborn history. And of course, I often misread it and think of the Dearborn Hysterical Museum. There's nothing funny about it. Well, there is. I mean, it's a document of human activity, and some of it's funny, some of it's amazing, and it's all part of, you know, one way or the other, what we are today. So try to get down there anyway. So that's in West Dearborn, just on Michigan Avenue. It's 21950 Michigan Avenue, and it's the Dearborn Historical Museum from 1 to 6 p.m. tomorrow, December 6th, Saturday, December 6th. It is, actually, there's two buildings, but it's the Commandant's Quarters, as it's, and I didn't realize there was two buildings, but yes, so, but that's what it is right there, the big one, it's going to be a great activity. It's, donations will be accepted on site, because it's a nonprofit, too, that gets almost no money at all from the city of Dearborn, so it's desperate to stay alive, so its history may be ended unless it gets some additional financial support. A lot of you went there for their beer tasting events. I think there were two of them last fall, and that really helped them out. As far as I know, it didn't cause any accidents or other related alcohol-related issues afterwards. So it was all good. And so thank you for supporting. Also, another nonprofit, the Dearborn Historical Museum. Get choked up when I say that. I think that's not the way I'd name it. But anyway, good place, good people. Take the kids. I'm sure Santa will be there somewhere too, because he's very Victorian. Did you know that? And the quote here is, the Victorians, this is from Jack Tate, focused on family, goodwill, peace, and happiness. That's what we'll be doing too. Well, that's sweet. I know a lot of Victorians had big wars at the end of the 19th century though, so they weren't all sweetness and light. At least in their homes, with their families. Yeah. Okay. Also, just found this out today because I was looking at the Press and Guide website, which is pressandguide.com. And a story dated actually Wednesday, December 3rd, but wasn't placed until today. And it won't be, therefore, in the papers. It won't be, it wasn't in the Times Herald. And it's not, I don't think it's in either one of the papers. I looked through the papers. Maybe I missed it. But tomorrow in East Dearborn, that's right, starting just a little bit west of Schaefer on Michigan Avenue at the Arab American National Museum and going east, 4 or 5 blocks, the East Dearborn merchants have put together an event they call the Holiday Shop Hop. They want you to hop from shop to shop for pop. No, that's, I'm getting all Dr. Seuss on you. Holiday Shop Hop. And you don't have to hop. You can walk, and they suggest you walk slowly. There's a lot of things going on from 12 to 6 tomorrow. Just go down really quick. Of course, Arab American National Museum, the Blick Art Materials, that's on the west side of it. And then if you work your way down, there is a craft fair at J.B. Bamboozles, which they host the first Saturday of each month anyway. That'll be going on. And across the street from J.B. Bamboozles is the Retro Image Antiques with a collection of vintage Christmas ornaments, decorations, 20% discount to anyone who brings in pet food or a pet toy donation for the Friends of the Dearborn Animal Shelter. They have all kinds of other things there, too. One block down from the Retro Image in the former Hewitt Music Building, you find the new home of Green Brain Comics and Stormy Records. So if you go too far east on Michigan Avenue, you see a store that still says Green Brain Comics on it, and the windows are all, you know, pasted over, and it's a closed building. That's their old building, folks. No, they're in the new one, Hewitt Music Building, Green Brain Comics, Stormy Records, bigger and better than ever. And Green Brain Comics is offering a 20% discount with donations of newer, gently used kids' books for Operation Kid Equip. So bring in some new or gently used kids' books, and you can get a 20% discount on your purchases at Green Brain just for tomorrow. And a screen at Stormy Records, you can enjoy live music from noon until 2 p.m. by an artist whose name is Warren DeFever. He's promoting a new album, a solo album, I guess, because he's with the Detroit group His Name Is Alive. Okay. And by the way, they are collecting for Gleaners Food Bank, and they're offering 20% off your total purchase for your donation of just 2 non-perishable food items. So non-perishable would be like canned goods. Okay, just give you an example. And of course, Green Brain Comics has all kinds of comics and other comic-related memorabilia, merchandise, and of course, Stormy Records has thousands of new and used LPs and 45s, vintage vinyl, vintage carry cases, posters, and even cassettes. So we're not doing commercials for East Dearborn here. We're just saying it's a fun event. A lot of people may be from 12 to 6. And if you're going to be going that way, there's some other ways you can help out nonprofits, too, by visiting them. If you want to see the full story, of course, just go to pressandguide.com and, I don't know, search for Holiday Shop Hop, something like that, from 12 to 6 anyway, on East Dearborn tomorrow. And Monday. Yep. Monday is, of course, the special lighting of the Dearborn City Christmas tree. And that is, going to be happening in the afternoon. I have it here somewhere, and I'm trying to find the dates. I can't find the dates now. Okay, the times. Okay, here we go. I got it. From 6 to 9:30 p.m. this coming Monday, December 8th, at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center on Michigan Avenue. The Dearborn Tree Lighting, Christmas Tree Lighting Ceremony. It's also a sing-along. And this is not, this is at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center on Michigan Avenue, not at the new or the old city, Dearborn City Hall. And, of course, the new one is not called that, and the old one still has a sign up. But it is probably, we assume, nothing official yet in the papers, that ArtSpace is now the new owner of that building. So I assume they'll take the City Hall name down someday. Maybe it's they got to preserve the building historically on the outside. They promised that. So maybe the name Dearborn City Hall, which is sort of part of the concrete over the main door facing Michigan Avenue, maybe that has to stay just for historical reasons. Yes, I can say historical reasons. I can't say history reasons. Okay. The schedule events for that Christmas tree lighting on Monday, 6 to 6:30, Dearborn Big Band is going to play in the lobby of the Michael A. Guido Theater. Right outside the Michael A. Guido Theater. 6:35 to 6:45, set your watches. Christmas tree lighting ceremony will be going on with Mayor Jack O'Reilly. That happens outside in the theater, Circular Drive. 6:55 promptly, performance by Dearborn High School Marching Band. 7:15, holiday theme performance during the Dearborn Public Schools Elementary and Middle School Honors Choirs. 7:40, so you've been standing out there since 6 o'clock, Well, of course, 6 to 6:30, you're indoors listening to the band, the Dearborn Big Band. Yeah. Uh-huh. And I see somebody wants to come into the station, and there's nobody here but myself. So if you're listening to me, I'm right above you in the hallway there. I can't let you in. I'm doing a live show right now. Okay, he's shaking his head. Okay, good. I'm done at 2 o'clock, so come on back if you're around. Yes, he's shaking his head. Very good. Thank you. it's amazing. We have a little speaker outside our front door. 7:40, Christmas sing-along with O'Reilly. So there you go. And that's going to go to about 8 o'clock when, get this, 8 to 9:30 p.m., way past some kids' bedtimes, but Visit with Santa Claus, that's going to be indoors. So at 8 o'clock, you scoot indoors, Studio A, they're going to have refreshments in the lobby, and Santa Claus is there. And no cost, no charge for this, all free. Music, performances, Santa Claus, starting at 6 o'clock, first half hour indoors, and the last hour and a half from 8 to 9:30 with Santa Claus in the building. But the lighting itself, if you got to see the tree going on, that's 6:35. I'm sure it'll be to the minute, to the second, 6:35 to 6:45. I think they're going to light it one light at a time. No, I just can't explain why it takes 10 minutes to light a tree. I thought there was just one switch, but maybe it does go on one light at a time, and there's 500 switches. Just being silly, sorry. Also, let's see here. And the story on thepressandguide.com about holiday lights stopping by holiday nights is the concept anyway. And it's an event in the evenings at the Henry Ford. That is, of course, the Henry Ford Museum in Greenfield Village. But they like to call it for several years, but I think it's stupid, the Henry Ford. On the website, they placed it today, Friday, December 5th, at Press and Guide, and it seems to indicate that holiday nights kick off Friday night. Well, if you read the story all the way through, as you always should, because even the headline says, holiday nights are beginning this weekend. I don't think so. I think the story is to appear this Sunday in their paper. And it's next Friday. The article later on says that these holiday nights are beginning December 12th. And they're just Friday, Saturdays, and Sundays. But for two weekends, and then December 26th and 27th only, which is after Christmas, of course, but they're still going to do the Christmas night. So a big event. You do have to pay money, but it's to a good cause, the nonprofit, the Henry Ford. Tickets are $22 for non-member adults and $16 for children over 5. If you're a member, member tickets are discounted. By the way, kids 4 years old and younger are free. A lot of things going on inside the village. A lot of the buildings are open and specially decorated for Christmas. And 100 people will be dressed in period clothing. Hope they won't get cold. Around the village to provide a perfect atmosphere. You can visit the different shops and buildings. Each will represent a specific scene from an era gone by. It will be Model T rides, horse-drawn wagon rides, carousel rides, and music everywhere, including live performances. So it's a wild time, fun time, if you have the money to spend for it. And they do tell you, though, that, and this is true with their Halloween nights that they do before Halloween, scary stuff out there at night in the village. And these all start at 6:30 p.m., and they go for like 3 hours or so until there's a big sing-along. But if you need to go to thehenryford.org and purchase tickets. Tickets are going fast, and several nights are already been completely sold out. They can only accommodate so many people because they're not opening the whole village. They're just opening part of it, if you will, and trying to give a lot of fun and attention to the people that get in. So if you want to take part in that with the family, and it's supporting a good nonprofit, very good organization, The Henry Ford, as they call themselves, go to thehenryford.org to purchase those tickets. I guess you could go in person and buy them at their ticket office, too, I assume. Doesn't say, but I assume. Can't be impossible. Okay, only about 5 minutes to go before Blues. Yes, our Blues Show, Highway 61 with Joe M.K. is to start at 2 o'clock or whenever the music moves us. And I'm going to keep tossing stories in here at you. I did tell you, and I know you've been sitting there on the edge of your chair, when's he going to tell us about the train station? Okay, now. I'm going to tell you right now, okay? The official report has gone out, is that just a few more days, and the new train station's going to be open. It's going to open on the 10th. So what day is that? 5, 8, next Wednesday. So at 6:51 a.m., the first train will roll into the new station, which is in West Dearborn area, more than the current train station, which is a little closer to Michigan and Greenfield. A good deal closer, half mile closer. So Amtrak is moving all of its operations from the current train station, which also, this is a good location to remember, currently they're behind the Dearborn Police Station, to the new 16,000-square-foot Dingle Transit Center, named after John D. Dingle, of course. And he's going to be around. And it's going to be a lot of fun because they're having big open house ceremonies with John Dingle and Debbie. Or they're expected to be there at the open house from 4 to 6 p.m. on Monday, December 15th. And I hope to get there on that during that time, too, even with my daughter and granddaughter, because we hope to have a train out of there from the new station. We have a little trip planned to Chicago before Christmas. So I thought it would be fun for my granddaughter, who's only 7, to see the station before we leave. I think she's seen the old one, which is not much to look at, you know, but nothing special. But the new one should be very nice. And they'll have it all fixed up for Christmas, I bet. And you know, from the new station, people attending the open house, you can also enter a free drawing to win tickets to the Henry Ford's popular holiday nights. I guess they put a few tickets aside for that. So, plus, I bet they're going to have refreshments and, oh, it doesn't say here. So don't expect free food. But, you know, the new transit center does have a pedestrian bridge over the tracks that allow travelers to access a new entrance to the Henry Ford complex, including Henry Ford Museum, Greenfield Village, the IMAX Theater, and Ford Rouge Factory Tours. I think, well, of course, you have to pay money. You can't get in free there at the new train station. But it'd be interesting to see how that worked out, whether that just is a way for you to jump on the train, or I think they'll probably have a way for you to buy tickets there. And I know that the village train is right behind the official train track, a little down the hill. So that's going to be a great new way to, at least for visitors coming on trains from any direction. I guess there's only two directions they can get there from right now, east or west. It's going to be a great new facility. Oh, and if you haven't seen the new Ford Motor Company F-150 pickup truck, there's going to be one there during the open house. Well, isn't that special? The Transit Center has received a silver certificate, not real silver, I'm sure, from the U.S. Green Building Council. Oh, boy. So I wonder if they have trees on the roof or something like that. Very energy efficient, I bet. So anyway, that's going to be happening. The new train station, opens on next Wednesday, the 10th of December, in West Dearborn, and the new and the old train station will be closed, and that is the site for the new Dearborn Animal Shelter. When they get the extra $6 million raised to build it. City of Dearborn is donating. Last time I checked, it was somewhere around $700,000, though, towards it. But $700,000 is not $6 million. So they still got a little ways to go there. Okay, other choral activities. Oh, my goodness. Next week, Saturday, the 13th of December, there's a big, what they call, holiday chorale festival. And it's going to be all of our local singing groups, the Dearborn Community Chorus, the Vanguard Voices. They're bringing in the Macomb Chorale and the Dearborn Symphony Chamber Orchestra to perform too. The Vanguard Male Chorus will be singing carols in the lobbies, lobby. You can get reserve tickets or student price tickets at the center. You can also go to their website for more information. Dearborn Theater, that's T-E-R, the less status-conscious way to do it, .com. Dearborn Theater, that's the Ford Community and Performing Arts Facility. Specifically, the theater is the Guido Theater, named after former Mayor Mike Guido, of course. So this is a big, nice event. Not too expensive. Top price ticket is only $18. That'll be a lot of fun and great singing, of course, as well as being joined by the some of the members of the Dearborn Symphony Orchestra. The Choral Festival starts at 7 p.m. next week, Saturday, December 13th. As I said, the Vanguard Male Chorus will sing carols in the lobby from 6:15 to 6:45. So you get there a little early. Audience members are also invited to a punch and cookies reception immediately after the concert. So if you stay to the end, you get cookies and a little punch, a little holiday punch. Okay. Bam. All righty. What else are we doing here? Let's see. This is WHFR Dearborn you're listening to, and going to continue with a few more stories until Joanne Korczynska begins her blues show in just a few minutes. Lame Duck Session in Lansing, going on now by our legislators, the governor's there too. He's not a lame duck governor, but a lot of the people, I think almost a third of the people in the House and the Senate, are not going to be back in January. So they're trying to get some laws passed before a lot more Republicans and quite a few additional Tea Partiers within the Republican Party are going to be coming in January who don't want to spend money on anything, including roads. So we haven't heard about the roads bill. We haven't heard about anything, except they did pass, at least in the House anyway, an extension for Michigan film credits. Just one movie was shot in Michigan this year, and you probably heard about it ongoing.